Hi, this is Andrew.
And this is Amy, and this is the AADL Productions Podcast.
Recently, AADL teen librarian Aaron Helmreich had an opportunity to chat with Top Chef's Season 4 winner Stephanie Izard. Stephanie, a University of Michigan grad, talks about local cuisine, offers up advice for those entering the culinary field, and dishes on Top Chef seasons past and present.
This is Erin Helmreich. I'm one of the librarians here at the Ann Arbor District Library, and we're here with Stephanie Izard, the Season 4 Top Chef winner, and she's going to be here at the library presenting in a couple hours, and so we were lucky enough to sit down and ask a few questions, hopefully for those of you fans that are out there for Top Chef. So, I guess I'm going to start out with, what did you think about Season 5? Have you met Hosea? Were you happy that he won?
Yeah, I watched the whole season. I did a blog for BravoTV.com. So I watched each one intently, and I was glad Hosea won. I get to spend a lot of time with the winner doing different events, so Stefan sort of scared me, and I didn't really want to spend that much time with him. I was definitely rooting for Carla at the end, like I think a lot of people were. She was sort of the underdog that came back. But Hosea's a really great guy. I've gotten to meet him a couple times recently, so
yeah,
he's cool.
How did you feel about the finale with Carla and Casey and all that kind of controversy? I know that everyone sort of felt like Casey threw her under the bus.
Sabotage. I mean, it was both of their faults a little bit. I mean, any chef should always believe in their food and not necessarily listen to others. Carla should have known that she was strong enough, she could have done her food, and she probably would have won.
Yeah.
From what it sounded like, because the dish that she did on her own without listening to Casey was her favorite. And, you know, I'm sure her cheese plate that she had been preparing before she went would have been great. And Casey suggested this blue cheese souffle, which I actually ate at an event with her in Montana that another chef had done at a demo.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, ding, ding, ding. That's where she got that idea. But, you know, I think Casey was just trying to be helpful, but in the end it really just hurt Carla. You have to let a chef do what they're used to doing. So,
well, especially since it seemed to me with whatever the other dish was, Carla was going to make like a little tart. She was so good with pastries and crusts.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what like brought her. Tom loved her pastry crust. Yeah. She did it multiple times, but in different ways, and he loved it. So she should have just stuck with that.
Yeah. What about as far as just other Top Chef people? I know once you're on the show, you're sort of like in a little club. Did you have friends that you were friends with before, or people that you made good friendships with that you sort of feel like you're kind of part of a little family now?
I think when I meet them for the first time, people from season 1, 2, or 3. The second you meet them, we all hug each other, and it's like we know each other because you go through this really strange experience that even if I was to sit here and try to explain it to you in detail, you still don't know how it felt to be there. So we just have this strange, unique bond. And there are a couple people that I was friends with Valerie before the show, and Dale Taldy and Dale Levitsky, and it's nice to have people that were in my life that we got to go through it together. So, yeah, we're definitely a little sort of fraternity of people.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was made me think of it. I think you mentioned in one of our conversations that you hadn't seen the recent football challenge when past people came back, but the season 5 folks won. And so what I kind of wondered about that was because the past people had been sort of out of the pressure cooker. Do you feel like that kind of might be why when you come back in, you may not be as successful, even though you feel like, you know, you've been through the show, you sort of lose your drive when you're on it?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Nikki, actually. I didn't get to see it, but I talked to her afterwards. And she said it was nice to be there, not being a contestant. At least she didn't feel as much pressure. But I'm sure being away from the cameras for a little while and then getting back in there.
Yeah.
It's just such a – it's like when we went to Puerto Rico months after having filmed, I lost my comfort zone. And so that first challenge again was like, ugh.
Right.
It was like beginning all over again.
Starting all over again. Yeah, with the adrenaline rushes and stuff.
Right.
Do you ever feel like the title of Top Chef is sort of one-dimensional and that you get a little tired of always having to think about people thinking food, 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 talking about being a chef, or not so much?
I mean, for me, being a chef is, it's not necessarily who I am, but it's what I love. So I don't mind, I kind of end up talking about food all the time anyways. Like even, you know, when I met you, like we talk about food even though you're not a chef. I like talking about food. But I think more so just the title Top Chef. Even though it's great, I'm so proud to have done it, I don't want to be just known as I'm Top Chef Stephanie, because there's obviously a lot more to me, a lot more to my career. And I, you know, hopefully once my new restaurant opens and people see, you know, it'll be able to be just part of my career, not the whole thing.
Exactly. Well, one thing that a lot of people might not know is you did have a restaurant in your 20s. Did you feel like you had a lot of naysayers that were sort of like, don't open it yet, or you're too young? I mean, how did that whole experience
work? I don't listen to people's voices of reason around me, it seems, or my own. Yeah, I was 27. I was like, I think I'll just open a restaurant. My parents are like, you're crazy. And I, you know, I bought a building like for $750,000. Like, what the heck? I was 27 years old. But I'm so glad I did it. I just sort of took the risk. It did really well. And if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have gotten, you know, they wouldn't have found me for Top Chef. It's just sort of, I feel like everything in my life tends to happen for a reason and sort of leads into another thing. And even the mistakes I make, I mean, the restaurant, I'll never call it, even though it, you know, I ended up selling it, it wasn't because it was a failure. It was just, I decided that at that point in my life, I wanted to walk away from it.
Yeah.
So I think it was the best thing I ever did, even though it was probably, might not have been the smartest thing.
Did you feel that having that experience, though, of doing the restaurant and running it very much kind of gave you a little bit of an edge going into Top Chef, just with all of the challenges and, you know, different kinds of pressures that came along with it?
Yeah, I think definitely in the group challenges, as far as, I have like a different way of doing leadership, not so I'm like, I am the leader and I'm going to tell you what to do, but I think I work really well with others, and that's sort of how I ran my restaurant. I'm not a screamer, things like that. But I have I seem to be able to earn respect from those around me that I'm working with. And I learned that at my restaurant. So I think it helped in the group challenges and things like that. Yeah, I think, and just having had all those pressures every day, it was sort of like, all right, and all of us, I think, have had, you know, working in a kitchen in general is stressful. So
exactly.
Top Chef was just like another stressful thing.
Well, that was one of the things I felt like as a viewer of the show, you just, I think one of the advantages you had is that however you were able to do it, you just didn't seem to lose it, you know, in terms of getting stressed out and letting it throw you off the way a lot of the other contestants experienced.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there was some stressful moments that maybe just didn't make it on camera.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, just trying not to let it, it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, if you let it bother you, then it's just going to make things worse.
Right.
So to sort of do what you can do and move on.
Yes, definitely. Kind of jump into a different topic. How about, I had a friend who was curious what you thought about, do you ever feel like America can ever have a national food, or are we too like regionalized and, you know, neighborhood that would ever be pulled off?
I think that we shouldn't, you know, I think it would be kind of a bummer if we had like a national food. I think maybe some other countries are like, oh, hot dogs and hamburgers and ribs and things like that. But I think it's fun that it's regional. And even within like Chicago, there's all different neighborhoods, and each different neighborhood is known for something. The fact that, you know, the U.S. is a melting pot.
Right.
That's what's exciting. And, you know, my new restaurant, people ask what the food's going to be, and it's got influences from different places. And when you say sort of contemporary American, you can say that and it can mean anything.
Right.
So it's kind of
right.
Nice. It's like a blanket that's like just all things tasty,
yeah.
I guess.
How do you feel about vegan cooking or vegetarian? Do you feel too limited by it?
That's funny you ask, because I donated a dinner through Bravo for this Macy's charity, and the people that bought it are vegans, and they don't drink.
Okay.
That's fine. But they're vegans, and so I'm doing a dinner for 6 people in about a month, and it's all vegan. And I, you know, I'm probably just going to go do a bunch of reading and to get some ideas.
Yeah.
It's just something that I don't do. A lot of times I'll make something that's vegetarian. Like today I'm going to make something that's just like a nice vegetarian salad. But when I'm actually like, oh no, I have to make vegetarian, I start to stress out, feeling like I have to have some sort of stand-in for the protein. When you really, you don't,
right.
You know, but maybe throw some beans in there, things like that. It's just challenging because chefs, you know, love bacon and love pork and things like that.
Yeah.
So being asked to take out some of the things we love just makes it a little more challenging.
Well, that's good, as opposed to feeling like it's a limitation or you don't get hostile towards it. I know there's definitely lots of chefs who are hostile towards vegans and not having the protein there
right.
on that meat.
Well, sometimes, you know, in the middle of Saturday night service at 8 o'clock, when a vegan comes in and they hadn't told you they were coming, and they're like, oh, I'm a vegan. You're like, well, great, because I have lots of time to make a dish for you right now. But, you know, you just suck it up and do it, and they always end up being happy that you accommodated, so.
That's good. Could you talk a little bit about the folks on the show, the judges? I know people kind of have, you know, is Padma that pretty? Is Tom, you know, as I know a lot of people, he's got a lot of fans in the straight and the gay community. just sort of that experience and some of the different guest judges.
Yeah.
What those experiences were like.
Yeah, well, I'll hit on Tom first. Like, Antonia had this huge crush on Tom, and every time he came in the kitchen, she got all blushed. And now, I mean, there's something striking about him, like blue eyes, bald, sort of sexy, something going on. So I can see that. And he's a pretty cool guy, too. So Padma, I mean, yeah, she's gorgeous. She's a bit of a diva. And she Yeah, it's kind of weird because she didn't have a food background. She just came in and she's just the pretty lady. But I think she definitely draws people into the show and she does her job well. She actually eats all the food and likes to talk about it. So that's good. The other judges, I think, you know, Anthony Bourdain was the coolest one to see. He just, I always tell people, like, he walked into the kitchen and he's like 6'3", 6'4". He's a huge man. And his head is like gargantuan. It's like a cartoon character head. And he used to smoke a lot, so it's like purpley gray. I mean, at least in my mind when he first, because he walked in our first challenge and I was like, holy crap, I can't believe they brought him in, the big guns. So it's just cool to see him, but it was like, it's freaky. Danielle Belude was one of the coolest judges. He's like, hello, Stephanie. And he's like, Lisa. You know, we just like loved him. He's like this cute little French man and you just want to give him a hug. And Gail Simmons, she's the sweetest lady, one of the nicest people I've met. And I keep getting to see her at events over and over again. And I just love her.
She comes across that way. So it's kind of nice to hear that she definitely has that vibe. What about Ted from Queer Eye?
Ted's cool. I mean, he's not on it any longer, but on my season, he was there. And I actually got to, when I was leaving Puerto Rico, I was in a van with him on the way to the airport. So I actually just got to hang out with him and his partner. And it was super cool. He's a really nice guy, really chill and laid back and just fun.
He seemed like he was a good judge. I mean, in terms of just sort of keeping it compassionate at the same time being critical. So
right. And he actually, you want the judges to know what they're talking about and bring up points. You know, every once in a while, Padma knows food from being on the show, but sometimes she says something and Tom just rolls his eyes like, what are you talking about? And usually they take that out in the editing.
speaking of that sort of thing, they always talk about the stew room. How long would you all be in there sometimes? I mean, I heard reference that it could be hours on end.
Hours, like 3 to 5 hours. For the finale, we were in there for 5.5 hours.
Wow.
Sometimes, you know, it might be as short as like 2 to 2.5 hours, but that's why things got, you know, they threw a bunch of alcohol in there and they leave us in there for hours. I was
just going to say, they provide you with the booze and...
Yeah. I guess first season they didn't give him any alcohol because I was actually hanging out with Harold the other day and he was complaining. He's like, they didn't give us anything to drink the whole time. And then they realized that by giving alcohol, there comes the drama.
Exactly.
So they put us in the room and they're like, make us film little commercials pouring our like whatever wine it was sponsoring. So it definitely brought out people's anger and stuff, but there's nothing else to do besides sit there and drink, and we'd start playing with, we'd build little Glad product buildings and things like that.
Yeah. So were the judges truly deliberating the whole time, or was it a production issue, or?
A little bit of both. I mean, at the actual judges' table, like some of us, the people that weren't on the bottom, we would wait a good hour and a half or so while the three people on the bottom were just standing there getting talked to by the judges, asking questions. So that part just took a while because they really want to get inside your head, especially Tom, like, why did you do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I heard, like, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of arguing and fighting and things that I missed out on by not being on the bottom as many times, but that's cool.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's all these camera crews to worry about and getting Padma something to drink or whatever. I'm just kidding.
Well, I guess generally, do you have any advice for anybody that wants to get into the culinary field or from your experiences if going to school is highly recommended or life experience or if it doesn't really matter?
I think that the most important thing, I went to culinary school because I was sort of, I wasn't a late starter, but I didn't go until after I graduated from Michigan. And I wanted to get the basic skills, you know, learn how to use a big chef's knife and learn how to make stock and basics and the mother sauces and sort of just classic techniques. But then I realized that my first job that I went to, you know, I started like weighing out mirepoix and they're like, what are you doing? You know, you sort of relearn everything and realize that though you got the basics in culinary school, the real world is so much different. So I'd recommend, I mean, either going to culinary school or not, but once you've got the basics down, pick some chefs that you really respect and work for them each for about a year so you can learn different techniques. Because I know there's some people in Chicago, there's some of us that worked for a particular chef and other people that worked for this particular chef. And you can tell they work there because they're like, oh, we put thyme in everything or we use fennel in everything. And if you move your way around, then you can learn the different ways rather than just turning into sort of another version of them.
Right.
So I just think that's really important because there's not necessarily a right and a wrong way to do things. There's just different ways to do them.
Well, on Top Chef, I noticed that a lot of times, particularly Tom Colicchio, when they would be judging you guys, it would be, I can't believe you don't know how to do, and it would be some classic dish. Do you learn all those things in culinary school? I mean, like a corn on, I mean, it was just funny, like the different chicken dishes, and you need to know that this is, you know, what the standard is before you can, you know, learn to riff off of it. I mean,
I think that was a little, some of it true, some of it was a little bull. It's like, You know, like the chicken piccato is a big deal.
That was because, that was what I was thinking.
Ryan and
of.
Valerie both a little yes. bit unsure, and like I'm like, I used to actually do my sort of version of, I called it a piccata at the restaurant. And then when they were talking about there, I was like, oh, you know, maybe there were some things that I didn't realize that it had to be called piccata.
Yeah.
I just thought of it as like this, you know, citrus and caper sauce, whatever. So I don't necessarily think that, I guess it's a good idea to know the classics and maybe you should know them, but it's not the end all be all, yeah. you know? I yeah. mean, things are so evolving.
Well, you mentioned a couple times that you've gotten your restaurant opening. You want to talk about that a little bit and what the – you mentioned the cuisine, but just how the whole thing is working out and when you plan to open.
Yeah, I'm opening a new place in Chicago called The Drunken Goat. My last name's type of mountain goat, and so – and you can all use your imagination for why it's The Drunken Goat. It's actually a Spanish goat cheese as well. We're hoping to open by the end of the year, by like November. It all depends. Things are a little weird in Chicago right now. Some restaurants are closing down because of the economy. So if we find a space that we can take over, it'll be a little sooner. If not, the build out will take a lot longer. So sooner than later would be great. It's going to be super casual by the name. I guess you can tell that. I don't want to call it a gastropub because it's people seem to think of like burgers and fries and things. Mostly Spanish-Italian flavors, just sort of meant to come in with your friends, order a bunch of plates, and share. Some small plates, some sort of, you know, charcuterie. We'll do a lot of charcuterie in-house, which is a big thing right now. And just sort of trying to have fun with it. Like I said before, the contemporary American, because then I can use whatever flavors yeah. I want. I mean, I did a lot of traveling, and sometimes I use a little bit Asian flavors. It wouldn't be an Asian dish that I put on the menu because it's just too random. But if I want to use some Indian flavors or Asian flavors, you know, use whatever you want.
And once the restaurant's open, what's that going to look like in terms of your schedule, in terms of how much time you'll be spending there? Do you have partners or are you doing it alone?
I have partners this time. They have three other restaurants in Chicago. One of them will start off organizing and running the front of the house. The other one is the finance guy. And then I'll be in the kitchen. And definitely when it first opens, I want to try to be there, you know, 24/7. That's just the way I work. But I have so many other things that I'm trying to do now that I just have to learn to create a team that's strong enough to run the place if I can't be there one day. That was sort of my downfall with Scylla because I just would close it when I couldn't be there, which is just dumb.
You mentioned briefly you did go to U of M. So do you have any general memories, food or non-related as far as Ann Arbor? I know that when we were driving around, you don't recognize much because it wasn't close to campus and didn't get over to the main street side of town, so.
Yeah, I feel like I missed out by a lot by not coming down to the main part of town while I was in school. It was like this whole other world. I mean, my biggest food memory is just chapatis, and I hope I get to have one today. They're those giant fresh baked pitas. We'd get one every Sunday and just sit there and, you know, maybe nurse a hangover or something and just eat this huge thing. And they don't make them anywhere else in the world. I don't understand. So tasty.
Last night, we had a very awesome meal at a restaurant called Eve. Do you want to talk about it a little bit? Was that like a standard 7 course? That I kind of started to count.
Oh, we ate a lot of food. Yeah. It was awesome. She sent out some really great dishes. We had, well, just starting out with the charcuterie and cheese platter, just the way it was presented, and they had some their house-made mustard with it. Just some nice little accoutrement that were on it. I loved that. We had this tasty lamb dish with just like a spinach and mint salad on top. Just that little bit of mint like just made the dish.
Mm-hmm.
She set out some beef cheeks after we had like 20 million things to eat. So I couldn't finish mine, but everything was just really awesome. It's such a little tucked away restaurant. I love the cozy feel inside.
Yeah.
It was very unexpected. I'm so glad you picked it.
Well, I was glad. It turned out to be a good location and a friend of yours came, and so that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Just to finish off, do you want to talk a little bit about what you're planning on doing today for the demo in terms of the food that we bought? And
yeah, so we went to, actually last night we met some U of M people and they recommended we go to Plum Market, which I definitely wish it was here when I went here, although I probably would have spent way too much money there. We walked in, we saw these cool like mandarin kumquats. They had this whole citrus section that had all these different, like, I don't know, mixed together citrus.
Hybrids.
It was cool that we got to taste them. But to go into a market and see something new like that, it was just so exciting. So I got some of those little mandarin kumquats. I'm going to use those with some eggplant and do sort of a caponata salad, which is like a sweet and sour eggplant. Very classic Italian, but sort of my own twist. I'm going to do scallops with a miso marcona almond butter. I made this miso marcona almond butter once a while back. I just had all these marcona almonds in my house. And it's pretty tasty, so I like to use it a lot. And then I got some mussels. I'm going to make an escabeche, sort of a cross between, you can get escabeche in all different countries. And in France, it's escabeche. But they have different versions. And this is sort of my version of it. So hopefully it'll all work out.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Stephanie. Those of you that don't get to make it to the appearance today, we are going to be taping it. So you get to watch all the great food that she's going to be cooking. And thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm glad for coming back to Ann Arbor. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's cool.
If you'd like to learn more about Stephanie Izard, visit her website at stephanieizard.com.
You've been listening to the AADL Productions podcast from the Ann Arbor District Library.